I always had a bit of a vision that customers and shoppers would go to their preferred channel to buy a product. And some retail buyer once told me that the brand is something you can buy everywhere. So I guess for us at Charles Bentley, it was around how do we leverage the types of products that we've got and try and offer customers a choice of where to buy them, predominantly online in some of the products that potentially don't work for us in store.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Now, regular listeners will know that me and the team get a lot of joy and fun when you guys talk about us on social or leave us reviews. So I've got one of those to give a shout out to in this episode before we get started. So huge thank you to Irina Rasovic, hope I pronounced that right, who works at Luxin 10. And she put up on LinkedIn this comment about our episode 553 with John Mark Craddock of Lamaterra. Loved this episode. The insights into thoughtfully scaling a company, building supply chains, and being cognizant of your brand roots resonated particularly with me. Well, we're glad we resonated with you, Irina, and have a lovely day. Okay, in this episode, we are catching up with one of our past guests. We last caught up with Andrew in 2020 when he was dealing with the huge growth in sales caused by the pandemic. Well, he's back and this time talking about all manner of different things. We'll be talking about how you handle selling across over 20 different channels, balancing both buying in stock and manufacturing your own stock. We'll be talking a bit about price scraping. We'll be talking about what to outsource, and he'll be sharing his tips on expanding into Europe. Loads coming up in this one. Plus, of course, his top tips are excellent. So do listen to the end. And now to introduce our special guest. Andrew Steele is the e-commerce director at Charles Bentley. Founded 160 years ago as a manufacturer of chimney sweeping brushes, they now balance selling brushes and cleaning products via wholesale and drop shipping to some of the UK's largest retailers, together with running their own home and garden e-commerce store. Annual sales are now around £30 million across the group. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Chloe. Thanks for having me back.
Great to have you back on. Overdue, which I think is my fault and not yours. Definitely my fault and not yours. So how have you been?
We've been good. It's been busy. So we obviously last talked, we talked on a podcast, didn't we, in 2020. And I think I told you about our expanding brushes and brooms business online with some crazy stat about being thousands of percent up selling brushes and brooms online because stores were shut and at the infancy of the pandemic. So, but anyway, and then we saw each other, didn't we, last, it was April at Channel X, I think.
Yes, it was. It was at Channel X, which was a fantastic event. So things have obviously moved on quite a bit since then. And I believe you are now selling on, is it 20 different channels you're managing?
It's something like that. Yeah.
So own site, drop shipping, a plethora of marketplaces, wholesale. I mean, how do you keep all of that in check? Because every one adds another layer of complexity, doesn't it?
I think it's probably got harder, and it's a great question, and it's a question that we do ask ourselves, you know, a little bit from time to time. I always had a bit of a vision that customers and shoppers would go to their preferred channel to buy a product. And some retail buyer once told me that, or I asked him, you know, what do you constitute a brand? And he said, a brand is something you can buy everywhere. So I guess for us at Charles Bentley, it was around how do we leverage the types of products that we've got and try and offer customers a choice of where to buy them, predominantly online in some of the products that potentially don't work for us in store. So that was the reason, I guess, you know, we started selling on Amazon and eBay and, yeah, those infancy channels all those years ago, kind of 20 years ago. And then we built the business onwards from then. And things change. You know, we've backed other retailers or retail brands that have come into the market. And we've hopefully done a pretty good job with them and built technology to support the complexities of all this aggregation and how you get data from A to B and orders and shipping and tracking and look after customers and shoppers. So it's maybe I'm a bit blasé. Maybe it's easier than you think, but it's certainly a difficult one if you were going to start again, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like to add, once you're up to 20, to add one more is not too much complexity. Because like you say, you've already got the systems and the processes in place to do 20. So adding one more is not that much more difficult. But I would imagine the jump from 2 to 3 and from 3 to 4 and 4 to 5 is a lot harder. What's been the thing that, I want to kind of say, what's the most difficult thing about managing 20? Is it the data that goes onto the platforms? Is it the orders that come off, the customer service, the ops, the money? What's the hardest thing to get right?
When we first started on eBay, you know, you wrote a listing, didn't you? You created some content, and then we decided to sell on Amazon. And at that point, we said we would need some sort of aggregation because we didn't want to have to copy and paste stuff. So we went to an aggregation partner, and there weren't really that many back at that time. There was only a couple. And we selected one that we thought would be right to scale. And that did make life easier. And over the years, you know, we used that partner. We still use that partner today. And they helped us with European selling. And then they took more aggregation, you know, more channels on, et cetera, et cetera. The thing probably becomes slightly more difficult. And there's loads of those now. You know, they all do things in a slightly different way. Some are better and some are worse. The thing that probably is the hardest bit is when you've got other, you know, if you've got a web store, a Shopify, Magento, whatever, and you're drop shipping, you've still got to have data somewhere. Now you can use the data within the aggregator, but then you know you have to deal with the orders, but maybe the orders aren't within the aggregator. So we ended up having to build a bridge, and that was probably the harder thing for us to do because there wasn't any technology at the time that would do that. So we had to build our own. And then, of course, if you build your own technology, then you know you're in a whole bit ball game of other complexities. And we're just a brush manufacturer. And we sell some garden stuff, right? So we're not a tech company. And yeah, we had to become more tech focused and tech minded to understand how we were going to service a scalable solution to look after customers, regardless of the channel that they came to us through.
Because it's easy to get hung up on getting the information onto the product information, the graphics, etc., onto the other platforms. But actually, the more critical stuff is the stock, the pricing, and then the orders coming out on the other side. And once you've got 20, it must be really hard making sure you don't go out, not that you don't go out of stock anywhere, but I suppose that you don't sell stock you don't have anywhere.
It's easier than you think because, you know, within the bridges that we've built, it takes a proportion of stock. So it will say, I've got 100 gas barbecues in this SKU, and it goes, I'll send, you know, a third of it here and a third of it here and a third of it here. And that's, you know, that's algorithmically updated depending on the stock. Sometimes you can come out stuck if, you know, some of our partners, they don't update their stock for you quick enough, or it might be a bit manual. And you can sometimes see an oversell, but it's very rare because, you know, we've built in enough of the buffers that you don't really get that to that position. So, you know, we cope with it better than you think. I think the more challenging thing we're probably starting to see now is each channel is becoming really good with this data. So, you know, Amazon were the pioneers of data and what you could do with data and how you manipulate it and what you can see within Seller Central or Vendor Central. And everyone's getting a bit more clued up on that of what data they want to see. So all of a sudden, the challenges now for businesses with quite a few channels to sell on is what do you do with the data? Because you've got to do something with it. You know, gone are the days you just list something and it sells, or you maybe stick an ad on it or whatever. We've got to get a bit more intuitive as brands and businesses to what data is telling us.
Do you sell everything everywhere, or are you also not just making decisions about how you split what stock you've got across the channels, but also what actually gets sold on every channel? Because before you even answer that, how many SKUs are you handling? Because I'm guessing it's more than 100, isn't it?
It's about 600. Pre-pandemic, it was probably a lot more. And I think we came to the conclusion that, you know, we had maybe taken our range slightly too wide. Maybe it was 1,200 or 1,300. And actually, in reality, you know, when you're trying to, you know, you've got to be laser focused on the things that you want to really succeed in, which is why we're Britain's number one brushware manufacturer, because we spent, you know, 165 years learning about making brooms and distributing it. And there's some things that, you know, we're becoming really quite expert in now, and we have to forge forwards. So 600 SKUs, you know, it's not huge amounts, but we're confident in the SKUs that we're taking forward. But they are, I'd say, they're hard to manage. But it's the you know, the day to day upkeep of them in an ever changing world, I think.
And do you sell everything everywhere?
No. And I guess the reason we don't is because some people don't want necessarily to list certain products.
So it's more a case of the marketplaces not being the right place to do it, rather than we'll sell our top 10% everywhere and the rest will shuffle around.
Yeah, it could be fit. It could be some of the channels we work with now, they're a lot more curated, or, you know, they just don't want everything. And I think there's some products as well that we don't necessarily see fitting in some areas. So, you know, we have to be slightly selective in some areas about what we do with them all. But then sometimes you don't always know. And it's a hard sort of conundrum that sometimes we all face. You know, everything everywhere, you get more visibility, potentially traffic. Sometimes you don't quite know where something might sell. You know, we had a particular success over the pandemic with one particular retailer, and they're a retailer that you wouldn't necessarily see higher ticket items on. And yet they had less, I suppose, competition at the time. They're sending a Google feed and people are comfortable to buy it because they knew the brand. And all of a sudden you're seeing pretty good sales. So sometimes why should we limit people in a way? So, but I think there's more of that coming, more alignment for certain products to certain channels.
Okay, so it's kind of, you make your best guess with the other channel of what should be on there, but then you're also watching the data for the surprises of what works where.
Exactly.
And one of the things you can't get away with when you start selling on multiple channels is price. And should the price be the same everywhere? How do you price match? And it seems like one of the elements of AI that's really taken off in e-commerce is good old price scraping, which used to be, you know, it was a little bit complicated to set it up, so not everyone bothered. And now it takes about 30 seconds to set it up and everyone's become obsessed. What's your take on that nutty nightmare little area of the business?
Well, if it took 30 seconds, it was really easy. We would definitely use it more. But I think from what I've seen, it's not quite as simple as that. But you're right. It's become really quite difficult over the last certainly 2 years to control it. I think we've probably got in a better position this year with the consistency, because, you know, it does alienate shoppers to some extent if it's so far out, and every retailer obviously has a slightly different margin expectation. But the price scraping tool does, someone sent me one today, you know, and I hadn't seen this one before, and maybe this one is the one that's more competitively priced than the others, but it's, you know, it will keep everyone on their toes. And I gather as well, you can have some automation of price matching in Google now, which frightens me to death, because, you know, you've got to make sure you've set it up right in the first place before it just goes and matches something. So we have to be a bit careful. But I think, yeah, we're fairly aligned across the market, you know, across Charles Bentley products. So it is hard when you've got many channels, for sure.
Is it price scraping for knee-jerk reactions to things, you know, like Monday morning, oh no, they've changed their price, we need to do something? Or do you see it more as like competitor research and double checking the strategy, so it's a more thought through element than a that's changed, we need to do something?
Yeah, I think it's probably more just having a bit of an understanding that we want customers to be able to buy, you know, a product from their preferred channel, whether they want to get points or subscriptions or cashbacks or whatever. And I think it's probably. You know, we don't look at it all the time. I don't get obsessed by it. I don't look at it every 5 minutes thinking someone's listing a Charles Bentley product at one price and someone else's at another price. It's more of a guide to understand maybe what's going on within the dynamics of what's happening within the retail channel.
Now, you've got, I think it's about 130, 150 people working across the business. Does that mean you're doing everything in-house, or have you got some stuff you're outsourcing as well? What's your approach to that?
It's a good question. We've got two sides of the business. We've got our manufacturing side, which is probably around sort of two-thirds of the business at the moment. And that's manufacturing in Loughborough. We sell about 2,000 brooms. So 2,000 brooms an hour. So about 2 million brooms a year. And we're looking to expand that operation as well. So we have people within that side of our business. And within the e-commerce business, we've got quite a few experts that we rely on. I think it's quite hard to, you don't need them all the time. They're kind of fractional, you know, director level people that can come and support us in various different functions, whether it's forecasting, trading, or it's marketplace aggregation management. If I could get all the skills in the business, it's obviously quite expensive to do that. And actually to scale, maybe in time, we might need more, but actually it works really quite well for us at the moment, having touch points within the business with the right office-based people to work and support, you know, the aggregation partners that we work with, and many of those for a number of years to support the business.
I like that. So it's like often people think of freelance help or consultant help for this sort of business being at the lower level. You know, like we have someone who comes in every couple of weeks and they sort out all our product copy or they do all the photography. But I like your approach of, you know, the director level insight. We've got our Amazon specialist, we've got our aggregation specialist, we've got our cash flow forecasting, you know, stock forecasting specialist. How long did it take you to find the right people to wear each of those hats for you?
Quite a long time, I think. It's something that always improves, I think, because technology changes, isn't it? You have to go and find the next expert in something. And, you know, so it's taken a long time. But I think the aggregation part, we went to the aggregation partner back in 2009, I think it was. So quite a long time ago now. And they were an ex-employee, a launch manager within the channel. So they had a really deep understanding of not only the channel, but the complexities around migrating data around the internet. And that particular person had left the business, and you know, we were on a quite expensive managed service at the time because we didn't have the expertise in-house, and you know, it got really expensive and I didn't really feel I was getting enough value for money from it. So I knew this guy had left and LinkedIn was becoming a thing. So I sent him a LinkedIn message and just said, oh, do you want to do a bit of moonlighting for me? I'll give you some money every month, you know, sort of half joking. And they came back and they said, oh yeah, we've got the same idea. So so we were their first client, and that relationship, you know, has been quite long ever since, because you know, we've kind of grown up in our businesses together, and you know, we use them as sort of, you know, sounding boards for everything that's going on, and you know, it's a fairly trusted partnership in certain things that those guys do. Some of them are a bit more recent. The trading thing for us has become really, really important. You know, if you don't have it, you can't sell it. And obviously weather, when it's sunny, you know, you need to work out the risk of versus reward of stocking too much stuff in some areas. Like Charles will always, he'll blame if we've not sold enough and if we've got too much stock, and he'll, you know, never praise us if we've done well. He said we should have done more. So, you know, you've always got that paradigm shift. You know, working on forecasting, it's a tough old gig. So, you know, and we're putting more effort into how best do we link our forecasting models to weather forecasting, historic data. We're looking at what we do with search terms and search history and impression shares across channels. You know, you're taking this massive subset of data and trying to model it in a way that you're buying stock and bring it into not just a digital marketing calendar, but a calendar of understanding about what the data is telling you.
And then impacting both your production schedules and your purchasing schedules, I suppose, which is two additional levels of complexity. Because most businesses would either be doing production or they'd be doing purchasing, but you're having to do both. And I'd assume there's different rule sets to each, because you can't have everyone in the factory sitting around because the weather's not right.
It is quite complicated, because obviously we're manufacturing, you know, brushes and brooms in Loughborough, as well as importing product that's you know, garden furniture or whatever. So there's two sort of elements to the business. The box shifting forecasting is probably a damn sight easier to forecast than the componentry and how many bristles and fibers you need and brackets and nuts and bolts and handle types and customer labeling and all the other bespoke work we do to help customers and support customers. Or if it needs to go in a production box or a counter display or wherever. So, you know, my wife looks after that side of the business. And sometimes I look at the way that we forecast and think, yeah, there's got to be different ways to, you know, to do that.
And, you mentioned about using the weather to help with the forecasting, and then data from the search engines and Amazon data and all those different sorts of things. I find myself going, oh, that'd be so exciting. That'd be so cool to build. But then you have to remember, actually, we can have all the ideas we like, but if this doesn't help us and it doesn't actually impact us, so it's constant, I assume you're constantly questioning the rule sets and the data you're pulling together.
Yeah, and it's only just in the infancy how we build that out in a certain way. There's a few tools that, yeah, there isn't an off-the-shelf does that, but there's tools that can help you with it. So, yeah, we have to work through how does that work, and do we build it in-house, or is it an Excel model, or do we go out and take it somewhere to go and support us with something? And probably the same for the, I guess, what I call the net cash profit forecasting, because sometimes it's quite difficult to see where the stock in, where the channel management is being traded, and there's different channels have different rules with different commissions and rebates and other things. And, we need to, and businesses need to understand where is the dynamic of the sale, because you can maneuver the things around across the season, depending on the channel that's the most profitable for you. Ultimate goal is that you support everyone, but it's in reality, it's not always evidently possible to do that in some channels.
Of course, because if one marketplace is paying you on 15-day terms and the next one's doing you 90 days end of month terms and the next one's doing 30 days minus cancels, refunds and 30% just in case something happens and we'll give you that in 2 years' time, that's hard enough to build it with non-dynamic data. But as the sales change every day, of course, then the numbers change every day. So that must be a huge project too, to try and accurately predict that.
It is, and I think we have got some software in house that can aid us. We've got we call him a systems accountant. So he builds a lot of data and data sets within our ERP, and you can start to look at things in a slightly different way. But I think the key for us and certainly businesses is what I think people can get quite hung up on sales and not net cash, sales and gross margin. People can get really hung up on that and think that the matrix is right, and they might think a ROAS of 1 to 2 is amazing, and other people might think that's terrible. It depends on where you're going with your business. But I think we quite like the data integrity here at Charles Bentley to see actually what's actually going on.
Where is the actual money?
Exactly.
Yeah. A simple rule, but a very common one in retail, if you're doing it right. Now, changing tack a little, Andrew, but you mentioned when we were talking about how many different channels you're doing that you've also started selling across into other countries, which is obviously a great way of scaling, which has become somewhat more challenging this year with the trade wars going on. Let's not get into the politics of it all, but how has that changed your plans? Because I imagine back in 2024, it's been great. We're going to roll out to there, and there in Europe, and there in America. Now that the ground's shifting so much with all of that, how has that altered your strategic decision making about where geographically to sell and how fast to scale that up?
Well, I think if we wind back to probably pre-Brexit, when we first were selling predominantly on Amazon in Europe, France, Italy, Germany and Spain were the first markets, and we had a UK TI government grant to go and fund it, which is great. It was like 50% match funding, so we got lots of humans to go and write lots of copy and happy days, and then we were away. We then really got to round about the pandemic time, and the pandemic and Brexit all kind of merged into one, didn't it? And we were flying in Europe. We're doing about €2.5 million or something across those channels, plus eBay, Conforama, Cdiscount. We were going to launch Allegro in that year in Poland. And then the wheels fell off because it became abundantly clear it was going to be a lot more complex and difficult. And then I think, the pandemic sort of subsided, and then retail was in decline. And 2022 for businesses was very, very difficult, certainly in e-coms and certainly within garden furniture e-coms with the crazy container prices and the stock that we're all lumbered with. So us, like many businesses, we just focused on getting through that kind of crazy time. And it wasn't really until last year that we felt we'd come to a position that, we were supporting our shoppers and our customers in the UK, which is really, really important to all of us. And as a board, we had to focus on, get the UK right, get our stock right, get our pricing right, clear the decks and really make sure that we were going to be the preferred brand for, within garden with many of these different retailers. And it hasn't become until that point that actually we can go and look at Europe again. And what's become abundantly clear is it's not as hard as it was. A lot of things have changed. Technology is aiding, certainly in some areas, how to do it. So we've already started now selling back on Amazon into France as our first channel. And really, we should be able to roll out more products. We have to be a bit more careful about packaging and assembly instructions and all the legal requirements, which is a lot more complicated than it certainly was when we first started all those years ago. But in reality, it's not a difficult job. It just takes time. So we should have shoppers buying Charles Bentley products across Europe, really, en masse over the next 12, 18 months. And we should be able to go back into all those channels that we did. And there's still a lot of work to do to make that work. But certainly in a garden category, when, you know, we've had an amazing year of weather, haven't we? It's like a 5-year cycle, so it seems. Every 5 years it's amazing, and then it's sort of all right, and then it's not very good. And, you know, it scares to death in a garden category that, you know, what's going to happen next year or the year after. So, you know, we do need to diversify and actually give shoppers a great product in you know, Southern Europe, and where it's potentially warmer or the season's extended.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, Andrew, are you ready for the top tips?
Go on then.
Okay, then, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Well, I've nearly finished it. I picked up on holiday and I got slightly sidetracked with all sorts of family stuff, which is why I was on holiday. But I was reading a book called How to Make a Million in Business, which is by Gary Beckwith, and he's the CEO of City Cruises in London. And it's really interesting because, you know, it's like a bit of a rags to riches story. And I quite like that. I quite like the, reading about adversity and challenge and, you know, how people have evolved from sort of nothing and just learned along the way. So I love that type of book, and, you know, they're doing amazing from what it sounds like. So I think it's a good read.
It's always nice to read kind of what I call a business biography or autobiography, especially when it's in a different sector.
Yeah, because we all read too much e-commerce stuff, don't we? And listen to too much e-commerce stuff, and it's quite refreshing.
Go and see, oh yeah, I get where they're doing that. You know, look beyond is always good in my book. So I'll be looking that one up myself.
Yeah, and everyone, I think the thing we find, you know, and the same with, you know, meeting other people in other industries, and I'm on a course at the moment, like a leadership course, like mentoring course, and there's a lot of other sort of director exec, you know, people, and no matter the size of the business or the type of role, everyone's got the same challenges. Everyone's got the same problems with their teams or technology or sector or owners or transport or whatever, and it's just good to read and understand and learn.
Oh, completely. Okay, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I think for me, it's probably some people I talk to talk about their, you know, they're very fastidious about their own .com, and they don't really understand the leverage of going where the traffic's going. And as that shifts to marketplace and other areas, I think it's really important to look at where the data is saying the shopper is going, the impressions and the sessions, because if you're not doing those things, then, you know, you're really missing an opportunity to find shoppers that may not find your brand. Or so I'd probably say that as a traffic tip, not necessarily to get you to your site directly, but just have a wide cast the net wider for your brand.
It's a bit like being in the formerly hot area of the high street, but it's moved 2 miles to the left, you know? Okay. You know, but we're staying here. It was good once. We couldn't possibly move over there.
It's very true. And, you know, without going on it too much, I mean, the shift in the channels that are going to be around, you know, there's a lot going on with the Chinese channels coming to the UK. And sometimes I look at it and I think, oh, I don't really want to be there. But in reality, it's probably going to happen, and there'll be a time when we all have to consider if they're taking 50% of the market traffic for search terms in the UK, then, and you're not there, then you're being left behind. So we've always been quite good at, you know, as a business to sort of maneuver and be nimble and have a fairly open mind as well.
Good work, good rules for life there. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
One that I've had, which maybe slightly touched on, is Sellerboard, sellerboard.com for Amazon data, because it, you know, you can plug it in and you can use, you know, you can use its software to look at, you know, your sales and your commissions and your rebates, and it gives a bit of a mini P&L. which, you know, really I think, you know, it's nice to see if you're multi-channeling and you can, you know, we could build out more things within it to see. We've started using Klaviyo for charlesbain.com, and that's been really quite good for us, you know, to see how we set the flows up, and there's more customer interaction, which, you know, is really what we want to see on our own .com. You know, charlesbain.com is, you know, in a way it's the hub of where people might come to understand the brand. And actually in reality, we want them to buy on their preferred channel. If they buy from us, great. We want to service them and look after them and retarget all those other good bits. But in reality, you know, we want to support all the places that we sell, and you need to feel comfortable where you buy it from.
And the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
Well, not just a store, but I think as a business, we maybe slightly thinking of it a different way because we're manufacturing as well rather than just a pure play. But we've got a company called Auditel, and Auditel are our carbon footprint, it's like an accountancy firm, and they're doing a real deep dive. It's quite expensive, but it's a real big deep dive into the business, and it's touching everything. You know, it's asking the employees and our team how to get to work. It's how many times we go to the Far East to source products. How many miles are our, you know, fantastic sales team driving to go and represent the company and look after our customers? And it takes all that data, and it gives you a number, you know, gives you what it is, and then they start to set parameters around how you would improve. And I think that's great. You know, you can probably tell we quite like data, and we quite like understanding data. And then you can do something with the data, and then you can better yourself, and ultimately better the planet. So the Auditel data is really quite important for us, but not just that, but obviously the impacts of plastic packaging tax in our industry in the UK, that was going to make a big change anyway. So we're spending a lot of time on understanding that to remove plastic from product packaging, you know, getting a higher recycled content. For example, our clay chimneys now used to have a polystyrene big case because they used to break because they're made out of clay. So you had to really look after them. And now it's, you know, we've had to redesign and have like a honeycomb inner so that it still gets the benefits of the polystyrene, but without the plastic. So yeah, there's, and of course, you know, I think 600 online products and, you know, probably 2,000 products in total. There's a lot of work to go through and, you know, to make sure that we're, you know, really, really making sure we've got a great product that is carbon friendly. And we plant a lot of trees in our forests. So we're members of FSC. So, you know, obviously our wooden products are all FSC certified. So every time they're chopped down, and actually many of them are a byproduct. So, without boring everyone to tears too much, that, you know, wooden brooms are a byproduct of the rubber industry. So when they cut the rubber trees down to make, you know, tires and, you know, all the other things you use rubber for, the tree comes to the end of its life and it's chopped down, and obviously lots of them are replanted. It's quite nice, a very ethical product.
I had no idea you were going to say rubber trees at that point. That was a complete surprise to me.
I'm not the expert. If you want to get Charles to come and talk to you about plantations and wood, he is, you know, more than 50 years expertise in wood.
As it would be essential if you're making brooms.
Exactly.
I love those carbon top tips as well, because the data is obviously critical, and then there's clever solutions. Is lots of innovation and cleverness in the world of carbon. So thank you for that, Andrew. Now, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
Of course. So charlesbentley.com is the home of Charles Bentley products. And you can find all manner of home, garden, leisure products on the site. And we're on Facebook and Instagram at charlesbentley.com1860.
Brilliant. Andrew, thank you so much for coming back on the show. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you. So I'm really pleased we got to record it this time. So thank you so much for being here.
Great. Thanks, Clay. Thanks for having me.
What a pleasure to get to catch up with Andrew again, and how fascinating to hear how he's managing all that data and all those channels to grow the sales. And really fascinating to hear his plans for European expansion over the next 12 to 18 months. We should really get him on the show more often, so I will try not to leave it 5 years before we have him on again. To get your hands on the notes from this episode, including those top tips and links to what we mentioned, head over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/the number of this episode into the URL bar, and you'll be redirected straight to the right page on the website. When you get there, don't forget to add yourself to our email list. Now, if you liked this episode, then why not check out episode 294, yes, a little while ago, 5 years ago, in fact, which was our first chat with Andrew, which is packed with even more of his great advice. And if you want more on home and garden businesses, then head to ecmp.info/home to see all our home and garden episodes on the website. Thank you for tuning into this and every episode that you listen to of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners to succeed and thrive with their businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.